What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Wednesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where we post all of our new content, whether it be podcasts, articles, news and notes, everything on the baseball side gets shared out through that page. And if you're not somebody who uses social media, you can check all of that out at sportsethos.com. Guys, we're going to be going through some of the big news from Tuesday's games, talking about some of the standout performances, and then we are going to be getting into the most added and dropped players of the day. We have to start with Jared Jones, though. He has become, over the course of the last month, one of the most impressive pitchers in Major League Baseball. He had another incredible outing last night, went five innings, allowed just one hit, no earned runs, struck out seven, and did not walk a batter either. He had a 42% CSW and a 25.4% swing strike rate. He was pulled after just 59 pitches in an effort by the Pirates to preserve his arm, to limit innings, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a little extreme to pull a guy at 59 pitches. I think this is just a hyper reaction to what we've seen around baseball and everybody getting hurt. So they're trying to put him in bubble wrap as soon as they can. 59 pitches, though, it does seem like a very, very low number. He threw 50 of those 59 pitches for strikes. 85% strike rate, according to, I saw a tweet earlier, I can't remember who it was, but it was the second highest strike percentage for a starting pitcher in the StatCast era. Bartolo Colon had a start about 10 years ago or so where he had a slightly higher strike percentage, but this was one of the better starts that we've seen from any pitcher in a very long time. If you look at Jared Jones's stats, whether it's the box score, standard stuff, or if you look below the surface, it's hard to find any number where he does not excel and come close to leading Major League Baseball. If you're looking at xFIP, expected fielding independent pitching, 2.14. He has far and away the best mark in all of baseball. If you look at expected ERA, he's not quite as high up on that list, but he still comes in at number 17 at a 2.74 expected ERA. And then if you look at the strikeout minus walk rate, which is one that I really do look at a lot, I think it might be the most important metric. There's a lot of fancy stuff when looking at pitchers, but strikeouts and walks are still going to tell you a lot. He is the second best strikeout minus walk rate in all of baseball behind Freddy Peralta, 34.1%. He has a 36% strikeout rate and only a 2.3% walk rate. And then the last thing I'll get into in that regard is if you get to the stuff plus, if you're trying to just evaluate the pitches, the characteristics of the pitches, he's number one in stuff plus with a 136 number, by far the best of any pitcher in baseball this year. So however you slice it, Jared Jones has been absolutely, absolutely elite. The question a lot of people have, myself included, is what is going to be the innings limit for Jared Jones this year? Are they going to let him go 120, 140, 160? I'm really not totally sure. The fact that they're pulling him after five innings and 59 pitches would tend to suggest that they're probably not going to let him go more than maybe 120, 130 innings throughout the year. They're going to do what they can to try and limit those bullets that he's going to throw. The last two seasons, we have seen 126 and 122 innings pitch, respectively. So I figure that's about the baseline, but it's also not something I'm going to be expecting a lot more than either. I think like 120, 130 should roughly be what our expectations are for Jared Jones. But that's fine, right? Most pitchers, you know, generally speaking, you're getting like 150 or so from the average pitcher. If you're getting, you know, 120 or 130 absolutely elite innings out of Jared Jones, I think you'll absolutely take that. He is this year's version of Spencer Strider. And I don't think that that's hyperbolic to say. If you even just look at the pitch mixes, it's very, very similar. There's a lot that, you know, if you look at Strider, you look at Jones, it's like, oh, this is something that's, you know, come out of nowhere the way that Strider kind of did a couple of years ago. The pitch mix is very similar. The dominance so far is very eerily reminiscent of what Strider has done. I think that, you know, this is potentially a situation where he becomes one of the five or seven best pitchers in baseball if he's able to stay healthy. And I was not expecting this. I don't think a lot of people were expecting this, but that's just the nature of how things change. He is, and again, I always stress not to overreact to April stuff. Don't be dropping established players, et cetera, et cetera. Give the season time to stabilize. But when you're seeing this level of talent, we saw it in spring. He's carried it over into the regular season, and he has been, you know, statistically speaking, arguably the best pitcher in all of baseball. At worst, like two or three on that ranking. It's hard to not buy in here. Whether or not this is going to be something where he ends up as a Cy Young candidate or so, like it's headed that way. And I know it sounds crazy to be talking like that April 17th, but If he keeps this up and he throws 130, 140 innings like this, it's hard to see him not being at least a top five or top six Cy Young candidate. The crazy thing is he's only 71% rostered in Yahoo leagues. I don't know. It should be a lot higher than that. I don't understand why it's not at least 80, 85%. People will talk about all Yahoo roster rates. You can't look at them accurately, but we're still in April. Like, these leagues should still be active. People will talk throughout the year of, oh, people stop playing and they start focusing on football and pickups aren't accurate. But in April, they should still be fairly accurate. He should still be getting added up quite a bit. And he has been added quite a bit today. We're looking at about 1,000 adds, but it's not enough. You know, 71% for a pitcher who is, you know, right now maybe the hottest pitcher in all of baseball is crazy. He should absolutely be on every single roster right now. There's absolutely just no excuse to find him anywhere. But let's talk about Ranger Suarez. Ranger Suarez, talk about best pitchers in baseball. He has been incredible, and yesterday he threw a complete game shutout. I actually, you know, I'm not a huge betting guy, but I took the under on his strikeouts yesterday. I saw it at 6.5. I was like, okay, it seems a little bit high for Ranger Suarez. Who would have thought that he'd be throwing a complete game shutout? He allowed 7 hits, struck out 8, and walked 1 batter. 32% CSW and a 16% swinging strike rate. He has a 1.73 ERA and a 0.77 WHIP. And the supporting metrics for Ranger Suarez will tell you that that's not just noise early season. You know, sometimes you'll see a guy with a 1.7 ERA, and then all the advanced metrics are just all over the place, like we saw with Carlos Rodon as of a few days ago. The ERA was really good. The advanced metrics were kind of terrible. With Ranger Suarez, he has the 1.73 ERA, but he has a 2.51 xFIP, 2.75 FIP, and a 2.05 xERA. If you look at Sierra, which is my favorite of all of those ERA estimators to look at, he's at 2.46. We're also seeing a really nice bump in the strikeout rate up to 28.4%, and the walk rate is only at 4.2%. I don't think that those are going to stick necessarily. Is he just a 28% strikeout rate guy? Probably not, but I could see him being like a 23, 24, somewhere in around slightly above league average. The command has always been pretty good, but even if he's able to just shave that, you know, typical 8% walk rate that he has down to like 6 or 7, which in the early going he has done that and then some, it looks like we might have got ourselves a really nice deal here with Ranger Suarez. He's been a pretty consistent pitcher now, going back to 2021 when we thought he was the closer, and I added him in a bunch of leagues in 2021 expecting that I was going to get a closer out of him. He became a starter, and he had a 1.36 ERA over his 106 innings. So you took that production. You took what he gave you in 2022. Last season, he battled a couple of things, and he missed some time. Had a 4.18 ERA, which is still not even bad. I mean, it's not great, but for what your expectations are with Ranger Suarez, a 4.18 ERA is definitely serviceable. And now, the way he's gotten off this year, he looks incredible. He's 71% rostered on Yahoo, the same number as Jared Jones. I think that he also is definitely worth an ad wherever you can find him. He's not somebody that you'd necessarily be starting every single time out. He's not quite in that circle of trust for me if he starts against the Dodgers or Braves, etc. Probably not, but I think in most cases, Ranger Suarez is a set him and forget him kind of guy, unless you are seeing an extreme matchup. He should be added wherever you can find him. 71% is just really a crazy low number for what he has done so far this season. Well, let's talk Ryan Weathers, though. Ryan Weathers had not looked terribly great in the early going. He has started to figure things out in his previous outing a little bit. You know, against the Yankees, he went more than a little bit. He went 5 shutout innings, but just the 1 strikeout, it was kind of not an outing that you look at and you're terribly impressed with. But yesterday against the Giants, he went 6 strong. He struck out 10 batters after allowing 2 runs and 5 hits. Now, the thing with Ryan Weathers yesterday is that he was removed early with a hand cramp. I say early. He had thrown 6 innings, 90 pitches, so it's not like he had a lot left in the tank, likely. Probably more precautionary than anything else after he'd already really done his job. He had a 43% CSW, 21% swinging strike rate. He looked fantastic. Assuming that he is good to go, he's lined up to face the Cubs on Sunday, and I think he's a pretty decent streamer. You know, he has a 2.70 ERA over his first 20 innings pitched. Now, after that pretty bad first start against Pittsburgh, I don't think that he is somebody where he is like a must roster, have to have him on your team kind of player. Definitely prioritize him below Jones and Suarez in terms of free agent pickups. But he's still somebody that I think is a fairly interesting streamer, and potentially there could be something there. Once they have a big start like this, 10 strikeouts, against a decent offense that has some right-handed mashers in it, then I think that you can probably take a look at him as somebody who is at the streamer level at this point. Not that I want to go overboard, but, you know, nobody has gone overboard. He's only 8% on Yahoo. People aren't fully buying in, and again, neither am I. But I think that he has done enough at this point to warrant streamer consideration for that matchup on Sunday. Yusei Kikuchi, I don't think he's getting nearly enough love for what he's been able to do. He's only 54% rostered on Yahoo still, despite just being, you know, absolutely dominant the last three times out. He's been fantastic. Yesterday was no exception. 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, and 9 strikeouts with just 1 walk. Excuse me. He had a 32% CSW and a nearly 14% swing strike rate. I think he is the best widely available starting pitcher on waiver wires, only up at 54%. When I wrote this last night, excuse me, he had a 53% roster rate. I thought it'd go up above 60. I actually wrote it in my notes last night. It'll be a lot higher tomorrow. Only 1% higher for Yusei Kikuchi. Not something that I really understand. His next start comes against Kansas City next week. They've been a good offense, but they're also not a team that I'd be afraid to use a hot pitcher like Kikuchi against. He's definitely somebody that you should be adding and using for that start, and even beyond. Yusei Kikuchi is a must-roster player in fantasy. If you just look at what he's been doing, if you look at what he did last year as well, it's just a very, very consistent outings going back now about a year. Not quite a full year, because I think early last year there were some struggles, but we're looking at a good, good long sample size of Kikuchi really thriving. So he is somebody that you should be thinking about picking up. Not even thinking about. If he's there, pick him up, because he should not be on waivers. Jordan Romano returned from the IL and immediately got the save opportunity last night. He did convert it, but there was some nonsense that went on. He did hit a batter. It was Gleyber Torres. Allowed a double and then a run scored on a ground out. So he did allow the earned run, but the job is his, right? Toronto put him back into that role right away. Yimi Garcia has been fantastic. But I don't think that Yimi Garcia is going to be somebody who does take that job over from Romano unless we see another injury or Romano has like 3 or 4 blowups in a row. I think they'll do everything they can to keep Romano in that role. I don't think that he is quite as safe as he was a couple of years ago in terms of closers, but I still think Romano is probably a 25 to 30 save guy, 25 to 30 save guy roughly, probably still looking at a low threes ERA with decent strikeout numbers. So I still like Romano. I'm just a little bit, and I'm honestly not even concerned about Garcia at all, but he's been really good. Romano does have injury risk. It's definitely him. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely Romano. But if you have space and you want to hold on to Yimi Garcia, I wouldn't hate it. Like, he's been giving you great strikeouts, great ratios. He might get the odd win, the odd save. I couldn't really justify it in a shallow league, in a 10 or a 12 team league, when there's just so many options available to you. But in your 15-team leagues, if you picked up Garcia to speculate, he might not be a start. But I think that he's not somebody that you have to necessarily just cut either. It is Romano's job, but we've seen it every year. There are a few relievers, more than a few, usually about 10 to 12, who are able to have good fantasy value despite not being closers. And I think Garcia is on the right track that he could do that and still give you a couple wins, couple saves, great strikeouts. This year, he has been one of the better relievers in baseball so far. So I wouldn't be rushing to cut him. But at the same time, he's not the closer right now. So if that is something that's really important to you, you need those saves from your relievers, he's not going to be giving you that, but I think there's still enough production there that you can kind of justify holding on to him. Let's talk about Ryan O'Hearn. I thought what he did last year was just kind of a random good season that we weren't going to be able to see him repeat. But so far, he has been doing that. He's batting .333 through his first 45 at-bats. He's hit 4 homers, 11 runs scored, and 6 ribbies. And he's batting third nearly every day. Sometimes he's in the four hole. But he's got a very, very, very enviable roster spot, or lineup spot, I should say, for Baltimore. He's first base and outfield eligible, and he's producing. And even if you just look at last year, where, I mean, a lot of people didn't really believe this in the long term, but he batted .290, 14 homers, 5 stolen bases, in only 345 at-bats. So there was a lot to like about him last year. There's just as much to like about him now. I wasn't initially bought in, but after seeing him kind of carry it over, you can make the case for him as an ad, I think, in most leagues. That eligibility, infield and outfield, is really, really sweet, and he's still widely available, only on 22% of rosters. So I think O'Hearn does make sense here. I initially, like in the preseason, I was thinking, is O'Hearn even a guy who's going to have the job all year? And that was kind of where my head was at with him, but that was a miss. Based on what we've seen so far, he is a must-roster player at this point. He was only 10% rostered last night. He's jumped up to 22, so people are getting in on him. You should add him now if you do want to get in on the Ryan O'Hearn train. Let's talk Dalton Varsho. People gave up incredibly early. I think he's one of the top 3 or 4 names that I've received questions about in the early going. Do we give up on Varsho? Do we drop Varsho? Do we drop Varsho? I got him all the time. He's looked really good over the last week. He's 5 for 17, couple of homers. He's stolen a base. Seems to have his confidence back. And I think if you're giving up on him, it better be a very shallow league, and there better be like an unimpeachable type of player out there. Out of position, of course, but if you're dropping him for like a Jared Jones type, if he's available and that's like Varsho's the only realistic cut, then I can understand it. But there's very few leagues where I would want to be getting rid of Varsho. We're looking at a guy who is likely to give you 25 and 15 or so. Good counting stats. I think he's a strong hold. I really do think that Varsho is not somebody that you can be giving up on really in any case. Like maybe some extreme cases like I mentioned. He's the worst player. It's a very shallow league. There's a guy like Jones on the waiver wire. Okay. Most cases, it's not something I'd be willing to do at this point. Let's talk about Hunter Brown. We were right. We called it. I think a lot of people did because that's kind of the way that fantasy baseball has been working. You know, you can't really predict anything. But Hunter Brown had a very good bounce back start against the Braves after getting just destroyed against the Royals last week. A lot of people, like a ton of people, cut Hunter Brown after his start last week. And now, of course, people are adding him again today because he had a good start against the Braves. He went 6 innings. He allowed just 2 earned runs, 3 strikeouts and 3 walks, which is not exceptional, but he got through the Braves. 6 innings, only allowing 2 earned, is a massive victory against the Braves. 26% CSW, 12.5% swinging strike rate. Everybody went into massive panic mode because it was a horrible start, and the start prior against Texas wasn't exactly great either, but I still think that it was way too soon to pass judgment on Hunter Brown. The talent level is very high. The strikeout upside is great. The organization is really good. I think people who dropped him are going to be giving up on, you know, 5 months of value here, where he's probably going to be something along the lines of a 3.5 ERA with an above average, well above average strikeout rate. So if you're seeing Hunter Brown on your waiver wire, and most people are at this point, he dropped down to 53% rostered on Yahoo after being well above 80 to start the season. He might have even been in the 90 range. He's available, he's talented, and I don't think that he should be sitting on 50% of waiver wires. It's a bad start. You know, it happens to most pitchers throughout the season. If it happened in the middle of June, we probably wouldn't give a shit, right? Look what happened with Bailey Ober. He got absolutely destroyed in his first outing, comes back against the Dodgers and shuts them down, and then does the same thing again against the Tigers. Like, he seems fine now. If anybody's still worried about Bailey Ober, they shouldn't be. And I think this is going to be the same kind of case with Hunter Brown. He has a bit of a tricky schedule coming up over the next couple weeks, and I've heard some people use that as the reason to justify dropping him. Okay, let's say he has two tough matchups, and it's the Cubs next week. It's not like it's the Dodgers or the Braves again. It's the Cubs. Well, I don't want to take anything away from them, but they're missing their best player right now, Seiya Suzuki. And I think there was actually something going on with Bellinger. I saw somebody mention something. I don't think he's hurt. Is he hurt? No, he's not hurt, but Bellinger's been terrible. So Bellinger's not been great. Suzuki's out. It's not a really scary lineup right now. Nico Horner hasn't been doing what he usually does. So I have no reason not to start Hunter Brown next week against the Cubs. And, you know, the reason that I hear a lot of people say to drop him is, oh, it's a tricky couple weeks. Let's say even if we're going to concede that it's a tricky couple of weeks, there's still like 25 starts left for the season after that. We're going to drop him because you don't want to start him for 2 weeks. Like either you took with a top 150 pick. I don't understand it. I really don't understand how people are already giving up on Hunter Brown. I do understand being frustrated, of course. I had him in my lineup in Tout Wars where I was doing really well to start the season ERA-wise, and then he just put my ERA up by like a whole run. So I'm definitely not thrilled with him right now, but I'm also not nearly at the point where I'd want to be cutting him for my team for nothing. I think that's really a premature move. If you're still not sold and you want to put him on the bench, then more power to you. But to cut him, I think, would be irresponsible still at this point. Let's talk a little bit about Reynaldo Lopez now. He has been one of the most impressive starters around the league so far this year, and he had another great outing last night against the Astros. 6 strong shutout innings where he struck out 7 and allowed just 1 walk and 4 hits, 32% CSW, and a 15% swinging strike rate. He's allowed just 1 run through his first 18 innings pitched, 18 strikeouts and 6 walks. That is excellent. The only thing really, because I'm not concerned about what he's going to look like on a per-start basis, it's more about what's the workload going to be going forward. If you look at the innings pitched by year, 2023 it was 66, 2022 it was 65, 2021 it was 57, and then in the COVID-shortened year it was 26. He was a starting pitcher before then, and we're looking at close to 200 inning sample sizes in each of the previous 2 years before that. But we're talking about 2019 and 2018 here. I just don't think he's built up enough that you can be able to expect a massive workload from him. Are we going to expect 120 innings? Like, even if he got to 100 innings, that'd be a 35-inning increase over last year. Teams don't generally like to push those inning or those year-over-year innings limits beyond, you know, about maybe a 40 or so increase. You're not usually seeing guys go from 60 innings and then they're all of a sudden throwing 130, 140. I think 120 is probably about the upper limit for Lopez. They'll have abbreviated starts for him, or maybe there'll be a phantom IL stint, or he'll be an opener. Maybe he gets put in the pen at some point. Like, I'm not sure what they'll do, but he's not going to be able to just go six innings the entire year for 32 starts. It's not going to happen. He's only on about 45% of Yahoo rosters, and actually that might have jumped up a little bit today. Let me just double check. It probably did. 47% of Yahoo rosters. So first of all, the move would be, in my mind, to add him, because that production shouldn't be on waivers. But I think it would be wise to explore a sell-high trade, probably not as a one-for-one, but if you can package him up with somebody else who's overperforming a little bit, I think it would make a lot of sense to just see what the market looks like in your league. I think he's going to be really good over about 100 innings or so. And I, again, somebody that I was kind of off on, but my analysis of Lopez was, again, based on this, about the volume. It's not about the per-inning production, really. It's just about we're only going to get maybe half a season's worth of innings out of him. So if you can capitalize on the strong start where he is a top 40, top 35 player to start the season, then I think you should be looking into doing that. It's not to say that you sell for the first offer you get, but just see what the offers are looking like in your league. I think that there is some interest there. It really depends, right? If you're getting offered somebody who was being drafted right around the same range as Lopez on draft day, then it's probably not much of a value. If you're getting somebody who was drafted 5, 6, 7 rounds ahead of Lopez, because that's, again, what I'm still deferring to for the most part in terms of price, cost, it's ADP. There are some extreme cases, you know, Jared Jones, you can't look at ADP, Alex Lang, there's a couple of examples, but for the most part, you're generally looking at ADP. And if you're seeing something that is like, I drafted the guy at pick 250, and now I can trade him for a guy who was being drafted at pick 150, that's usually, in a vacuum, going to be a victory for you. So I'd look into selling Lopez. If you can't, then you ride it out. But just don't expect that you're going to have him there come fantasy playoffs, which for a lot of you guys in head-to-head leagues is the main part of this. You want the guys to be there for the last few weeks of September. And I just don't know what Lopez is going to be looking like come the end of the season. They're probably going to be fairly wrapped up in terms of a playoff spot by the time, you know, early mid-September comes around. They're not going to want to push him likely. So I just don't really see the point in a head-to-head league of keeping him. And I know it's a tricky one. It's not like there's one right answer, but come September, I don't think he's going to be doing a lot for you. If you're in a roto league, it's a different story. You're banking 120 great innings. It doesn't matter when they happen. In head-to-head leagues, though, I do worry that Lopez might be somebody that it would be a lot better to trade, honestly. It does change if it's roto or head-to-head, but those last few weeks of the season, we might not see him at all. So that's just something that I do worry about here. Let's talk about some of the most added and dropped players of the day on Yahoo. We mentioned number one already, Ryan O'Hearn. We're looking at more than 12,000 ads. Yeah, I absolutely agree. He should be added up. We've already talked about him. Jack Leiter, we talked about yesterday. He's going to be getting the start again. I'm not sure if they've officially called him up yet, but he'll be getting called up ahead of the start against the Tigers tomorrow in Detroit. I think he's a fine streamer. I don't expect this to be a long-time thing where he's just up now. I think you're probably looking at a start or two, and then he'll go back down. I'm not running out of my way to go and add him. Guys making their debuts, you never really know what to expect. I'm not overly optimistic. I think he's a fine streamer for the short term if you're in need of a guy, but there's a lot of fantasy players that I've come across that just want to add somebody for the sake of adding them because it's a nice prospect and it looks cool when you add a prospect and they do well, but I would only really be adding him if you need it, not just for the sake of, oh, I think Jack Leiter's going to be good, I want him on my team. If you need starting pitching, then potentially use him as a streamer, but he is far from like a must-roster player as far as I see it. Edward Cabrera, absolutely understand this one. He should be added up wherever you can find him. He is going to be starting against the Cubs. When will that start be? I think on the 21st. I think it's on the 21st of April he'll be starting against the Cubs. He should be added. If you can get him, first of all, this is like a rest of season type of play for Edward Cabrera. We talked about this. If the command is fixed, and I don't know that it is necessarily yet, we're talking about one good start where, you know, the command looked very good. But if there's a chance that that is fixed in any way, then you need to be getting onto that train. He's still available in 50% of Yahoo leagues, and I think that Edward Cabrera is somebody that could very easily break out. We know that the potential is his ace level starting pitcher, a 30%+ strikeout rate. If he's able to have like a 7 or 8% walk rate, then Edward Cabrera could legitimately be a Cy Young contender. Like, that is what I think of the talent. Last year, I was really bought in on him. I invested in a lot of leagues. I didn't do it as much this year, and I think I was probably a year too early because he looks fantastic in that first start. Maybe it sticks, maybe it doesn't, but for the time being, he's got to be added up to your teams. Only on 50% of rosters, but he's been added 11,000 times today, so he will not be sitting around forever. If you want him, you better go get him. Kirby Yates is being added up quite a bit today as well. Nearly 10,000 adds, and he's up to 35% on Yahoo. For the time being, he's the closer for the Rangers. I have mentioned this a few times. We talked about it a lot on the mailbag yesterday. I don't know if this is going to be a long-term thing. I would imagine that Leclerc ends up getting the role back at some point. When that'll be is anybody's guess. But we also have David Robertson floating around in there with recent closer experience and actually, you know, did a pretty decent job over the last couple of years as a closer in different locations. So I don't think that the job is necessarily just Kirby Yates is for sure 100%, but for the time being, he's the guy they went to for the most recent save opportunity. And in this landscape of fantasy baseball, that's all we kind of have at this point. Abner Uribe, we all thought he was the closer for the Brewers, and then they used him in the fourth inning yesterday. We're kind of prisoners of the moment. We have to react and see what these managers are doing on a day-to-day basis. But if you need saves, Kirby Yates does appear to be the guy at the moment. Ryan Jeffers is being added up quite a bit. He has been fantastic so far this year. You know, he had a great year last year, 14 homers, 3 steals, and he batted 276 over just 286 at-bats. This year he's gotten off to a start with a 292 average, 3 homers, 11 ribbies. He's been great. I think in a lot of cases you can justify him as your catcher, even in a one-catcher format, 12-team league. I think that he is probably on the cusp there, and he's probably like in the 11 to 13 catcher ranking type of range. I'm going to have to do rest of season rankings at some point because we've just lost so many players. Ryan Jeffers, I think, is on the cusp of being single catcher league viable. I think that he is somebody that you should take a look at. And Jake Fraley is also among the most popular ads today. I've talked about him quite a bit on Twitter. Not quite a bit, but he's been in a few nightly notes. He's somebody, if you're in a daily change league, it really is almost a no-brainer to have him on your roster. When he's out there, he is producing, and that's not always going to be to this extent. He's batting .425, but we know he's got great speed. We know there's good pop in the bat. We know he's in a good lineup. And when he's playing, which is against every right-handed pitcher, we're getting middle-of-the-order bat here. There's a lot to really like about Jake Fraley, and I think 35% roster doesn't really do him justice for what he does to your teams. You're looking at a guy who's not going to be like, you know, if you look at rankings at the end of the year, he's not going to be like a top 100 player most likely. But the actual production he'll give you when he's in the lineup last year was 15 homers, 21 steals, and a .256 batting average. That's excellent. That is just absolutely excellent, and that was only over 336 at-bats. Over the course of a whole season, you could extrapolate that, and you're probably like a 25-35 type of guy. I don't think he's going to get there, but the talent on a per-game level is really, really through the roof, and I would be taking a look if you can find Jake Fraley. There's a lot to really like situationally, talent-wise. There's a lot to like there. Garrett Whitlock is the most dropped player of the day on Yahoo. We've seen about 5,000 managers cut bait with him today. And the reason being that he was removed from his start yesterday with some oblique tightness, I believe they've called it. Was it tightness? Left oblique tightness. Obliques have been kind of like the number two cause of, you know, everybody's gray hairs this year behind the UCL. A lot of oblique problems. Whitlock is the newest guy. Now, I don't think this is something where you got to be rushing to cut him. He's been very, very good this year. If you're really in a desperate crunch in a shallow league and you don't have room, then I can understand it. But, I mean, Garrett Whitlock, through his first 18 innings this year, has 17 strikeouts, a sub-2 ERA. He's looked really good. He was one of the guys that I was really, really interested in coming into the year. Didn't get nearly enough shares. There's some guys that I talk about a lot that I really liked, like Yusei Kikuchi, who I only drafted on one or two teams, and I'm thinking, why did I do that? Whitlock was another one of those examples where I wish I had more shares. I'm not going to be overly worried about this. If they had initially said right away, like, yep, it's a grade 2 oblique strain, he's out for at least 2 months or something, then obviously then you can think about dropping him, and a lot, you know, not even think about it, then you're almost certainly dropping him. But if it's just a precautionary removal at this point where they haven't said anything along the lines of a timeline, this is not something that I'm going to be that worried about for the time being, and I wouldn't be rushing to drop him. Abner Uribe is a tricky one. He's also been dropped quite a bit, and I do understand dropping him. it does seem like he's kind of losing that early season hold on the closer job. It's a situation where I just don't want anything to do with Milwaukee at this point. You know what? Forget it. Forget about it. Unless you are so desperate in like a 20-team league that you need to have like a potential for 5 or 7 saves, I would say screw this. You picked up your eBay. You probably spent a lot of fab money on him, and or you spent a high waiver priority on him, and now he's coming out in the fourth inning of a game where they're down by 3 runs. It doesn't make any sense. I know that fantasy, or I know that real life managers don't give a shit about fantasy players, but this is just really bizarre. Why would you give him the closer role? He saves 3 games. He does have a shaky outing mixed in, or maybe even 2 shaky outings, but then you put him in the fourth inning. It just seems like they don't have a handle on what's going on with that bullpen. And it might be Piamps. It might be, you know, Elvis Peguero. There's a couple options that they could go to, but at the end of the day, at this point, I don't even care anymore. What are we doing? Splitting up 25 saves 4 different ways at this point, and we're always chasing it week after week. Oh, it was Uribe last week, so let's start Uribe this week. And then, oh, okay, Piamps got the saves this week, so I'll add Piamps and drop Uribe and get a couple of Piamps saves. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't Piamps this week when I added him. Now they've gone to Peguero, and now he's the add. Is this really worth it to be going through all this headache and spending a bunch of waiver priority and fab just so we can have, what, 10 saves maybe? I just think it's a situation to avoid at this point. Unless you're, like I said, in a deep league, you're absolutely desperate. But most of you guys, 12-team players, forget about this whole situation. It's just an absolute mess at this point. Lance Lynn had himself a pretty damn good outing. It was just kind of weird that he only struck out 1 batter against the Athletics over 7 innings. But it was a very, very, very good outing for him. 7 innings of 1-run ball, 5 hits. It was good stuff. Why he's being dropped en masse today, I don't really understand it. He does face the Diamondbacks next time out. They have been a very good offense. But Lance Lynn is not somebody that I think you can just be cutting. He's back to a situation in St. Louis where he's had success. He started off pretty well so far this year. 3 of his 4 starts have been very successful, including the one against the Dodgers. You know, he had a tough one against Miami, which is kind of weird because they've been like a terrible, terrible offense. But I think Lance Lynn is somebody that it would be way too soon to be giving up on at this point, especially on the heels of a good start, albeit against Oakland. But why are you cutting him? Just because he started yesterday and you figure he's not going to start for a few days. Like, I want to know the thought process of cutting Lance Lynn right now. He's looked good. He didn't have a lot of strikeouts. Okay, whatever. He still has 19 strikeouts and 20 innings this year. The strikeouts have been, you know, very good before this start. So I'm not going to say, oh, Lance Lynn doesn't strike batters out anymore. He only benefited because he faced the A's. You know, he had more than a strikeout per inning in a shutout performance against the Dodgers just a couple weeks ago. So I don't want to hear that he can't strike batters out or face good teams anymore. I think that Lance Lynn is still a very viable option and should not just be cut because, you know, simply because he pitched yesterday. I think that that's kind of crazy. Tyler Wells is a bit of a different story. This one hurts. This one really hurts because I've been a big Tyler Wells fan going back more than a year now. I loved what he did last season. He was one of my favorite pitchers. I hated when he got sent down. I thought it was really stupid. He's been off to a tough start this year, and now we maybe have a reason why he has been put on the injured list with right elbow inflammation. Stop me if you heard this one before already this year. He was scheduled to start today against the Twins. So Baltimore has brought up a guy from the minor leagues. I'm not sure. I can't remember his name. Nobody to really worry about. But the main thing here is that Tyler Wells now has elbow inflammation. He has not looked great already. So I think that Tyler Wells is a pretty easy cut there for most of you guys. Deeper, deeper, deeper leagues. If you want to hold on and hope for a miracle, then you can. Once we hear there's elbow inflammation or anything elbow related, especially this year, I'm kind of ready to just be like, okay, let's be done with it. Brett Beatty is also among the drops, and I think this one is mostly in part because he had to leave yesterday with a hamstring strain. Or excuse me, he didn't leave. He actually just didn't get the start. He was a scratch with a hamstring strain. He's been very good so far this year. They said that they don't expect him to need the injured list and he just needs a couple of days off. So if you have Brett Beatty, I don't think that there's really any need to be cutting him. He's been very good so far this year. He's batting .305. He's hit a home run, 9 ribbies and 7 runs scored, batting in the middle of the Mets lineup. I wouldn't be moving on from him unless you're desperate and you really need that roster space. And I don't think anybody really desperately needs roster space on April 17th. It's only going to be a couple days likely, and he's not somebody that I would be saying, yep, just cut him. There's no point in rostering him because he's going to miss a couple days. No, he looks like he's actually breaking out this year. I've written that a few times. Big fan of Brett Beatty. I have shares all over the place. I have him on 6 out of my 14 teams. I think he's actually tied for my most rostered player this year, so I'm a little bit biased, but he's been very good, and missing a couple days should not be the reason that you cut him from your roster. The last player we'll talk about here as a drop, and I think it's kind of a strange one as well, is Brandon Marsh. Been off to a very good start. The power has seemed very good. He's hit 4 home runs already in his first 55 at-bats. Good speed. He's hitting for a good batting average. He's had a bit of a slow week, you know. He is 4 for his last 23. He's still batting .273 for the season. It's just a kind of a slow week for him. He's playing most days, pretty much every day in Philadelphia. Good lineup that needs to turn things on. Haven't really come around yet, but once they will, everybody's going to benefit from that. And Marsh is definitely somebody who will. Everybody will. Not to say that he is like a specific benefactor there if they start to heat up. Everybody is. But Marsh is not somebody that you should be dropping just because he has a bit of a slow week. I think that he is somebody, you know, everyday playing time in a very good lineup. His glove will keep him in that lineup a lot of the time, even when the bat might not be, you know, performing the way you're hoping. So even if it's like a, you know, a concern about playing time or whatever, like there's no angle to really be that concerned about. The production's good. It was good last year. He had 10 stolen bases and 12 homers while batting .277. That's good stuff, especially in 15-teamers. Absolute must hold. I think in 12s it's a little bit closer, but still somebody that I wouldn't want to be getting rid of. I think there's a lot of value in what Brandon Marsh brings, playing almost every single day, bit of power, bit of speed, good batting average. If you're cutting him, there better be a good reason why. But guys, that'll do it. That will do it for us. We'll be back again tomorrow to talk about what happens on Wednesday. There's a lot of day games that I'm going to be watching throughout the day, keeping tabs on that, of course. And if you want to follow along with the news and notes on Twitter that I put out, it's JoeOrico99. Ethos Fantasy BB is where we post these podcasts, articles, updates to our fantasy pass, every bit of baseball content. You guys can check it out over there. And if you're not somebody who uses social media, sportsethos.com is the place to be going. But guys, that will do it. We'll see you again tomorrow. But until then, take care and enjoy your night.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.